Today we have a very special guest in the Life, Learning, and Success podcast. It's Coach Bob Kamel, known as the biggest and best recruiting speaker in the country, helping athletes to get recruited for colleges. He started out his career as a high school coach at Fenwick High School, then went on to coach with Bo Schembechler of the Michigan Wolverines. After he did that for many years, he went on to coach with the famous Lou Holtz at the University of Notre Dame. A very, very decorated coach in the college level. Coach Kamel is going to be able to impart to everybody amazing motivational speaking over the years, but he's going to give his own motivational tips, his tips on recruiting, the very best of the best of how to get your athlete recruited, how for athletes, parents, and coaches to find the way to be the very best they can. And he's going to give us, obviously, a synopsis of his career. You'll learn from the best here on how to motivate, become the best athlete you can, and much, much more that you can apply to life. Enjoy the podcast with myself, head coach Bob Kamel.
Dave Schwing here with Bob, Coach Kamel. For others who don't know him as Coach Kamel, the official person last name is Bob Kamel, longtime coach with Notre Dame, assistant under Skip Holtz, and assistant under Bo Schembechler. He was their go-to guy as their recruiting coordinator for many, many years. Obviously, very, very successful program. And today we have him on. We're going to talk in the Life, Learning, and Success podcast about some of the great things that Coach Kamel has done, not just in the coaching field, but in a motivational area. He's one of the guys that I've seen speak personally live that is frankly unmatched in motivating young athletes, helping parents understand more about the recruiting process, and really just helping people understand what it takes to succeed and what you have to do to get there. So with that, I welcome Coach Kamel on the podcast. How's everything going, Coach?
David, thank you very much. At the top of the show here, I just want to let you know how much respect I have for what you do for student athletes. As a coach, I don't know if a lot of your people that are listening will know that you actually coach high school football, and then all the work you do to give young guys an opportunity to get to the next level and, most importantly, get an education. So hats off to you, buddy.
Thank you very much. It's I think we have the same mindset as that if we can continue to reach as many people as possible and help them get to where they want to be and be successful in life, then I'll feel like I've been successful. I'm sure you feel very similar on that. I wanted to talk about, going back to when you were your playing days, okay? So Coach has been around for a little bit, so we're going back quite a bit, and then I really want to cover, all the facets that really shaped who you are and how you got to where you were, and then obviously what you're doing now to really shape that philosophy. So take me back to high school football. Take me back what you learned from your very first coach and the history behind that in your playing days.
Well, to be very honest with you, when I was a young guy growing up in Chicago, I grew up in the inner city of Chicago. We really didn't have youth football. There was no seventh or eighth grade football. The football that we played, we organized ourselves, had kind of ragtag equipment and all that. But I fell in love with the game of football early, much before high school. So the first day that I went to high school was the first day that I had an actual had a coach. And my dad had a restaurant and a bar, and I came home from school that day, and my first day of high school, my dad said, you know, how'd it go? And I said, you know what, I'm going to be a football coach. True story. Excuse me. And Daniel O'Brien at Fenwick High School in Chicago, he was my freshman football coach. And I wanted to emulate him. I wanted to be him. I wanted to coach football. And I'm going to come back full circle. So I actually played in high school and then played in college, played at two different places in college, one at Memphis State, and then my college was interrupted by I went to the Army. And then after I came back from the Army, I played at the University of Illinois Chicago. Well, lo and behold, I was going to go to law school, and I went back to my high school to get transcripts, and I encountered Mr. O'Brien, who was my freshman coach. And he and I sat down and had a long talk, and later that day, I was the freshman coach at Fenwick High School. So I was actually the second freshman football coach in the history of Fenwick. I succeeded the gentleman who was my first coach the day I came home and told my dad I was going to be a coach. So my life went, you know, full circle, and God bless my dad, because when I came back and he said, well, did you get your transcripts? Are you all set? And I said, no. I said, I ran into Mr. O'Brien. I ran into Mr. Lawless at Fenwick, and I'm going to be the freshman football coach. Mr. O'Brien's going to step down. And my dad, I'll never forget this. He just said, you know, he said, do you have any inkling that you'd like to coach? And I said, yeah, I've thought about it a bunch. He said, well, you know what? Go try it. That law school is going to be there, even if it's next year, the year after, whatever it was. Well, I never looked back, and I became the freshman football coach, then a varsity coach, and then a head coach in the varsity, and then I went on to be a graduate assistant coach at Michigan under Bo Schembechler, and later on coached for Bo Schembechler as a full-time coach for 13 or 14 years, and then when he retired, I came to the University of Notre Dame under Coach Lou Holtz. So my life went full circle. I was blessed, to have worked for not only Coach Holtz and Coach Bo, but the influences of my high school coach and the coaches I worked for and athletic directors when I was a high school coach.
What was it that drew you to coaching football? What was it about coaching young athletes that really drew you to it?
You know, it was, I think, even from the get-go, like I said, we didn't have youth football, but we had the Union League Boys Club, which is like basically like the Boys and Girls Clubs now. And the people that were there, I'd go there every day after school. 3 o'clock school let out from St. Anne's School. 4 o'clock I was at the Boys Club. The influence that those people had on my life and how they cared about us. I think that I held that mantra through my entire coaching career in that I don't like the term players coach because it sounds like maybe you're not as strict with your guys, but I think there's a window for the definition of a players coach in the sense that I loved my guys and I wanted to help them in their lives. Even till this day, I had a situation last week where my very, very best friend in life, a retired Chicago policeman who I love to death like a brother, he became ill, had some heart problems, and I called one of my former players, who was a heart surgeon, and he's taken care of my friend, and things are looking up. But again, the relationships through athletics, he made Dr. John Cahill, who played for me at Fenwick, went to Yale and Yale Medical School. And when Frank, my friend, first told me about, you know, his symptoms, I said, wait a minute, you can't mess around with this. I called Dr. Dominic Tedesco, who was a teammate of John's in California, and he said, you know, tell Frank to call John. So it was a whole connection of guys that I had coached that helped my friend. I really don't go to college football games anymore. I do watch them on television, but this past week I went and I tailgated over at Notre Dame where the former players tailgate, and it was, again, one of the most rewarding experiences of my life. I recruited Autry Denson to Notre Dame. He's the running back coach there now. I recruited Mike Elston to Michigan, and Mike's the defensive line coach at Notre Dame now. So, you know, to see guys grow up, I told Autry, I said, you know, you're the leading rusher in the history of the University of Notre Dame, which he is. I said, but those rushing yards fail in comparison to the man, the husband, the father, and the coach that you've become. And that's the most gratifying part about coaching, being a part of young guys' lives.
Absolutely. You know, it was interesting. I had actually interviewed my father, who's a legendary track coach in New Jersey, in the New Jersey Hall of Fame, high school coach for 50 years. And you said that the very similar thing that he said before, you know, as soon as we started the interview, I asked a similar question, a little different, but similar question to him. And he said, caring for your athletes before, you know, obviously you have to be able to teach them the techniques they need to know and you have to understand the game that they're playing and all those things. But none of that matters until they know that you care. And, you know, you echo the same exact thing. I think that gets lost in coaching in any sport that so many coaches think that they are so devout of being experts in their field, they forget about the fundamental human element that goes into developing athletes is understanding, you know, what makes every individual tick. And then you can begin to motivate them and teach them the technique that's needed in order to be a great player. But I love that, you know, it's interesting because I feel like great coaches understand that's the first thing that comes out of their mouth without you ever having to explain anything to them. So I found that really, really interesting. A question I have for the coaches that will be listening to this podcast, making the transition from high school coaching to college and that process, how did you go about doing it and you know, what would you advise to a high school coach that says, hey, you know, I'd like to take the next step? How do they go about doing that?
Well, usually the way it happens, the avenue is to become a graduate assistant coach. Now, some of the bigger programs have what they call analysts, and this is creating more opportunities for high school coaches to get into college ranks if they so want to do so. The advice I would give is this: check your ego at the door. Just check your ego at the door and work as hard as you possibly can. Don't take any task to be too small or below you. One of the things I remember was, you know, we had 16-millimeter film, and just cutting up film and cutting up film and cutting up film and sitting in the graduate assistant office for hours and hours and hours. And later on, though, I never gave it much thought. The fact what the hours were or how hard I had to work. When I was hired full-time, one of the things that Bo told me was, Bob, one of the things that gave you this opportunity I'm going to present to you is not necessarily your knowledge of football, because we're going to teach you what you need to know, but your work ethic separated you from other people, and that's why I'm bringing you back to the University of Michigan. So I would say just keep a work ethic and study as much as you can, be in as many meetings as you can, take notes, review the notes. Don't worry about being handed the reins to your particular position. If your work ethic's good enough and you are reliable and loyal, one day they'll hand you the reins to that particular position and you'll be able to coach that position. So I would say keep an open mind, work hard, and don't take any task that's handed to you to be below what your station is once you make that commitment. And I think if with that formula, I think you'll do really well. The other thing that I learned when I was Bill McCartney's graduate assistant coach. Excuse me, David. And Bill coached the linebackers. And I learned a lot of defense from him. One of the things I did, and you know Les Miles, the head coach at LSU. Well, Les and I, we stayed with the players in the dorm during two-a-days. And I would really talk to the older, the veteran players that were at the linebacker position. And I would ask them about drills. And I would ask them what was important to them. Ask them what they felt made them better. Ask them what they felt maybe that I was not doing right. And it was amazing. And I think any coach that doesn't listen to his players, I think is really shortchanging himself. So Paul Gergesh and Mike Boron and Jeffrey Lee Akers, all those guys that were at fourth and fifth year guys, they taught me an awful, awful lot. And till this day, I thank them and I love them.
That's really interesting. I don't think coaches do that enough. And obviously, a lot of times, ego gets in the way of physically sitting down with and talking with your players and finding out what works for that athlete. That's a really, really fantastic tip, especially for young coaches who are learning the game as well as they are coaching it. So I think it's a really good tip. How about now, tell me what it was like to I guess, I'll let you kind of run with it, coaching with Bo Schembechler and Skip Holtz, and what were the similarities and differences between the two? Both led for those of the people who may listen to this broadcast who may not, because there are a few, Skip Holtz was for many years the head coach of Notre Dame, among other places, but won a national championship. Bo Schembechler was at Michigan for, I don't know, you could tell me, over 30 years, I would guess. And
21 years, David. 21 years as head coach, and then in the athletic administration. The one thing that between Coach Holtz and Coach Schembechler, now, I got to coach at Notre Dame because Coach Schembechler was good friends with Coach Holtz. They had coached under Woody Hayes at Ohio State. So when I came to Notre Dame, I had been warned that Coach Holtz could be really rough on coaches. But what my background was so congruent with his background that went back to the Woody Hayes coaching tree, which was sound fundamentals, technique for each player, above the scheme. Bo used to say there are no coaching geniuses. The guys that coach the best were the guys that coach technique. A player that has great technique can overcome any other shortcomings he had. And then the other thing was how involved Coach Holtz and Coach Bo were in the players' lives. It was amazing how much they knew about the players, how much they knew about their families, how much they knew about them academically. Coach Holtz could walk out to practice. I went out to practice. I coached the tight ends, and Leon Wallace was one of the tight ends. And I remember walking out to practice with Leon, and Coach Holtz said, "So Leon, that 400 class you have in business, how's that going?" And Leon looked at him. We were like both kind of stunned. Like, how would he know that? But you know, those things were done on purpose. He might say, "You know what? I'm going to check out. Maybe look at somebody's class list today and hit them up with how they're doing in that class." And that's impressive, and that impresses young guys. This guy really, really cares about me. David, you coached for Skip Holtz, who was Coach Holtz's son, and I'm sure there were a lot of similarities, but I'm sure that when I say this to you, you know when a coach cares about you. You know when a coach loves you. I had one coach that I coached with at the college level, and I thought he was the greatest guy in the world. And one of my former players came back and to campus and some years ago, and we were talking, and he said, "Why did you hang out with Coach so-and-so?" And I said, "Why are you asking me that?" He said, "Coach, you loved us." I said, "Well, I know I did. He loved you guys too." He said, "No, he didn't. He had one thought in mind, and that was to get to be a head coach." And if he said what I equated it to was, you know, there were I was one of the rocks in a stream that he could step on and get to the other side of the stream where he could be a head coach. He said he didn't care about us. All he ever wanted to be was a head coach. You can fool other coaches. You can fool the fans, to be honest with you, but you can't fool the players. You cannot fool the players. And anytime a coach is a phony, anytime he's self-promoting, the players know better than anybody, and they also know when you love them, which to me was like, even now when guys will call, "Coach, I'm getting married. I want you and your wife to come to the wedding." I'm Catholic. When my daughter Mary Pat was going to be confirmed, you have to have a confirmation sponsor. She asked that to Pete Griplevich, who was one of the tight ends I coached. if he'd be responsible for her confirmation, which he was. Later in life, when she got married, we had the family table, who was going to sit at the family table. And she said she was getting married, and she said, "Dad, I want Pete and his wife to sit at the at our family table." And that is like stuff that comes back to you as you go through life. That is, it's phenomenal. I don't know any other profession, short of the medical profession, where you can have that kind of an influence on a person's life.
It's incredible the closeness that comes from football and uniqueness between the player relationship and the coach relationship. From a coaching standpoint, what are some of the things that you think a player needs to do in order, maybe it's habits, but to maximize his own best skill set performance?
Well, that's a very interesting question. And I really think, first of all, I mean, this, and I'm really serious. The young guy, go and tell your coach, take me and make me the best player that I can be. Make me the best player that I can be. I want to be a great player. I can't do it alone. I want you to take me and make me the best player that I can be. And along with that, that goes along with that, and take me and make me the best player I can be and the best contributor to my high school football team. So when he said, you know, you were a really great wide receiver, we need help at the corner position, you can do one of two things. You can pout and say it's not as glamorous as being a wide receiver. You can pout and say, well, is this going to change my future in college? It's not. Accept that responsibility of getting a position change. And this goes to the moms and dads, too. I read some stuff in the paper the other day. And there's so much social media. And it was, I believe, a Facebook page where a quarterback didn't get the starting position. And the things that this dad said about this coach on Facebook that ended up in the newspaper were horrendous. If a parent does not support the high school coach with his son, that high school coach has no chance to make that son the best player that he can possibly be. No chance. Because what you've done immediately as a parent is put doubt in the young man's mind as to the abilities of the coach. And this gives him a license to second-guess the coach. My suggestion to a parent is, if you don't like a decision that your coach has made, call him, ask him to visit with him, ask him, you know, to kind of explain the process. Get with him. Get close to your coach. And then, David, moving forward just a bit, not to get ahead of ourselves, your high school coach cannot get your mom and dad, aunt, uncle, grandmother, grandfather, foster parent, understand this. Your high school coach cannot get your son a scholarship. He can't get him a scholarship. He can basically do three things. Vouch for your son's character, give the college coach a transcript, and then give him his DVD, his game tape. After that, when that handoff is made, the decision whether to recruit the young man or not goes to the staff room of that particular university.
I love that you brought that up because, obviously, having been in this for a long time with colleges and even now, you know, representing players at the NFL level, it's amazing, and this happens at the NFL. People, and these are kids that in the NFL that were stars in college, the vast majority of them, right? They all think that things have to do with politics, and I try to always tell people that if a coach makes decisions off of politics, then he is in a position to lose that position he has. And no coach who's putting his family to school, putting food on the table through coaching, is going to be willing to do that unless he's instructed by the head coach to do so, which is so rare. And that's, I think, one of the biggest fallacies that parents and athletes have, that they think that somehow somebody is conspiring against their own success instead of looking internally for their own success.
David, I will tell you this. When I visited with a young man and his family, and I'm not embellishing this. In my heart of hearts, this is how I did business. As soon as I heard a complaint about a high school coach by someone in the family, I almost would close the book and say, this has been a great visit. All the best of luck to you. Because if you're going to criticize your high school coach and you're going to be a problem in Paramus, New Jersey, you're going to be a problem in Champaign, Illinois. If you're a problem in Newark, you're going to be a problem in East Brunswick. And I don't want it. There's too much to do, too much to be positive about. So my advice to any parent or young man, do not criticize your high school coach to any college coach. No matter how hard it might be to bite your tongue, it will turn on a red light. And I know when I went through that, I didn't want anything to do with that recruit. And I'm serious. I am really, really serious. And I think it kind of goes back to having been a high school coach and having known how difficult the work is. And, you know, there aren't any high school coaches retiring from Marco Island in Florida. You know, there's a lot of guys working in the summer doing, landscaping, painting houses, whatever it might be, just to keep their family together financially. And so you got to, as a parent, you got to respect that. These guys, these men and ladies are in this because they love the work. They enjoy changing lives of young people. Do not criticize your high school coach. If you have a problem with your high school coach, visit your high school coach and pay him respect. If you are an incoming freshman parent, my advice, go see that coach just for 2 minutes at school. Coach, I'm so excited my son's going to be on your team. If there's any way I can help through as we move forward, you can count on me, and I'm looking forward to being a big part of what you're doing.
I think one of the greatest things I've read, it was from John Wooden, it was an audio cast I was listening to. You may have heard of this guy named Zig Ziglar, who is yes, right, absolutely. And Zig Ziglar talked about the story about John Wooden. And John Wooden went to a recruit's home, what you would call nowadays a five-star recruit, and went in and sat down with the athlete, ready to offer a scholarship, everything in tow from that standpoint, to give the letter, hand it to him, everything. Already basically a done deal. But he just wanted to meet with the kid to make sure he was a guy that could fit into his program. And so he sat down with the young man. The young man kept ordering his mother around and giving her a hard time and disrespecting her openly in front of Coach Wooden and the assistant coach that was with Coach Wooden. And they walked out of there. Coach Wooden left, didn't give him the offer letter, didn't give him didn't discuss offering him. And the assistant coach asked me, said, Coach, this is, the top player at his position. He's a can't miss. And he said, if he talks to his mother like that, then he's going to bring that to me in my program, and I don't want anything to do with it. And I thought that was so profound that it's lost on so many people nowadays because, you touched on it, because of social media. I call it social media. I utilize it in a very positive way. I always try no one's perfect, but I try my very best to always use it in a positive way to help enhance people in whatever they're doing. But I know that the vast majority of people actually use it the opposite in a negative way. to bash people and to be negative about it. So, it's one of those things where it's so quick to hit send, but you might want to think about hitting send before you do. And the same thing when it goes with criticizing your coach or even your parent, because one of the things, and you tell me as a recruiter if this is true, if a player sits down, and even if it's not about his high school coach, has a negative demeanor to him, he is someone that I found college coaches, and I've sat with great players that I had to play for me, and players have said, how come I didn't get offered from that guy? I said, I think this guy was set to offer you, but you came and slouched over. Your body language was poor. You weren't answering questions. He's giving you layup questions. You're not answering his questions. You dodge academic questions, and it wasn't why he didn't offer you. And obviously he already has your transcript. So why you dodge? He wants to know. You have a 2.5 GPA. Your GPA is not fantastic, but you qualify to play for him. He wants to hear from you why you have a 2.5 GPA, and you dodged his question. You dodged his question. He just wanted validation as to what's going on, But how do you think that young man should, when college coaches do come in to speak with him, how should they conduct themselves, carry themselves, interact with those coaches?
First of all, David, and I'm, again, very serious, practice what you're going to do and how you're going to do it. I start out with a firm grip, look the coach in the eye, tell him that you're excited to meet him or to see him again, and you're very excited about this meeting that you're about to have. Be attentive, sit up, take your cap off, leave your jewelry at home. Bling is great, but in certain situations, be humble, be excited, and ask academic questions beyond football questions. Every coach wants to know that you're engaged academically. They know you can play football. They wouldn't be there. You do have a transcript. So even if you're a 2.5 or a 3.5 or a 4.5, coach, I checked out your business marketing program, and this marketing is something I'm really interested in. They want to know that you're going to be beyond the football player when they come to their campus, because no coach wants to chase guys around as an assistant coach because they're not going to class. But that's a direct reflection upon the people that evaluated the young man when they brought him to campus. Did you really check this guy out, Coach Kamel? Do you know he hasn't been to English class in a week? Do you get over that building where he has his English class? I want you to come back here and tell me that you know he was there. No, I don't want to go through that. I have no desire to go through that as a coach. I've got too many other things to do. Are you going to help the young man academically? Yeah. You're going to get him tutors? Yes. Are you going to make sure that he's prepared with the tutors? Yeah, absolutely. But ask academic questions. Engage the coach. As you said, sit up, firm grip, look him in the eye. You do those things, and remember one thing, there's no second chance at a good first impression. So that first time when you walk in that room, you want to know that, hey, this is a business meeting, and I'm going to act as though it's a business meeting, and I'm going to do everything I possibly can to further myself as a person. And the other thing is this, and this might be way, way off base. Choose your language carefully. You mentioned this that young man with John Wooden. I had a young man come into my office with his mom, and he was a senior in high school. And he looked like he could have started for the Oakland Raiders the next day. I mean, this guy was something special. I sat down in my office with him and his mother, and he started using profanity. And I'm kind of like looking at this guy and saying, your mom is sitting next to you. What are you doing? So about 10 minutes into the conversation, I opened the top drawer of my desk. I took out a map and a visitor's guide to my school. And I said, here, this is something that will show you how to get around campus. It'll tell you where everything's at. I enjoyed speaking to you. And he said, that's it? And I said, yeah, that's it. And they stormed out. I didn't want anything to do with the guy. And it's the same thing you're talking about with Coach Wood. I mean, the guy's sitting next to his mom, and he's letting these nasty words fly. I'm like, you know, second of all, the mom should have never put up with that either. So it was kind of a two-sided sword, so to speak.
Right, sure.
I was appalled. I was appalled. When I saw this kid, I'm like, whoa, this guy's going to be a great – and he did. He went on to be a great football player at another school or a good football player. I can't say he always remained a good citizen, but he wasn't going to come – we weren't going to bring him into our football family.
What advice would you give to parents in that kind of a situation? Let's say their child is a great athlete and you know, maybe they've had a hard time handling him for whatever reason. Other people outside have gassed him up, and he himself doesn't always get some things. How could a parent, and it's a tough question, how could a parent get somebody on the right track, and what kind of outside help do you think is worthwhile in those kind of cases?
Well, first of all, lay down ground rules for the process in the family once the process begins. Because the process can become overwhelming. The influence of the process on a young guy can turn his head in a lot of directions and make him think he's a whole bunch better than what he is. And if the process starts to sway and get a bit out of control, get a third party to sit down with the young man, whether it's an uncle, a rabbi, a minister, a priest, a coach, whoever it might be. Solicit a third party to say, hey, you know what? You've got something really good going right now, and it can be something really, really great. But the way you're headed right now, you're in a collision course for failure. And unless you get this thing turned around, I'm afraid that that's what's going to happen to you. Sometimes, you know, there has to be tough love. You know, there has to be tough love in situations.
I agree 100%. And I do know that parents have approached me, have struggled with that. You know, again, I think, you know, parenting is definitely vastly different today. As far as how they approach things versus, you know, 20, 25, 30 years ago. But I do think certain fundamentals always apply. The son has to have respect for the parent, and it doesn't go any other way other than that. When the process begins and what the parent would like to have happen as far as how he conducts himself has to have that tone set by the parent. I think that's critical. And then at the same time, if a parent, you know, you touched on those things, a parent himself gets out of line thinking if he's the one going to college and not the young man, you know, which happens, as you know, quite often. It can happen. You know, he thinks he's the one that's going to be the star and not the son. He's got to get himself in a reality check. So, you know, it does require a lot of people to be able to help with that process.
David, how many times have you heard this? I know he's my son, but you can't, mom, dad, aunt, uncle, grandmother, grandfather, you have glasses on that are what I call the love that you have for the child changes your perspective through these glasses. And I understand that. I had daughters that participated in college athletics. My daughter, one of my daughters was a tennis player in college. There was no doubt in my mind she could beat Serena Williams. Because I loved her. But,
that's right.
Be careful.
That's a great, great message, valid, but fantastic point in that they have to really be mindful of the fact that they are 100% biased. It's okay that you're 100% biased. You're the parent. But you have to know that everybody else is looking at your son or daughter through a different lens, which more has to do with the ability. And I think if one of the most important things that parents kind of try their very, very best in to take themselves out of their own bias towards the process and really try to understand what's exactly going on. As far as the best way, and I've gotten into a lot about recruiting. The best way that someone who doesn't know anything about recruiting can get educated on the process. If you were telling someone from ground one, what should they do?
Find out as much as you possibly can. Get help. And understand. One of the things that parents understand is there's nothing wrong with admitting that you don't know anything about recruiting. There's something wrong about not going to get help. No, and if you haven't been through this process, you're going to know nothing about the process. And it's like anything else. You want to, you know, you can buy a house, you can buy a car, you can decide to move to another state, big decisions in your life. None will be bigger than the decision you're about to embark upon if your son or daughter is about to determine where they're going to go to college. And I say this for this reason. Every football player in the country is going to one day not play football anymore. This is not golf. This is not tennis. It's not something you do when you're 50 or 60 years old. The lifespan of a football player on the field, if they get to the National Football League, is a little bit less than 3 years. The last snap your son takes might be his last snap in high school. Probably, if he wants to play college football, it'll probably be his last snap in college. What happens after that? Have you used that ability, that investment, and those blood, sweat, and tears to pay for a college education that after football is over, you have a degree in your back pocket? That's what it's all about. Because, again, you know, I'm pushing 65 years old, David. I love to golf. My buddies will call me and say, hey, you know, you want to go play golf today, Bobby? Yeah. Nobody's ever called me that's my age and ask me if I want to go on out in the backyard, put on the equipment, and go one-on-one. We don't do that. We don't do that anymore. You know, I mean, guys are talking about, you know, I'm 27 years old. I'm about done with football. I'm 22 years old. I'm 23 years old. You see guys right now that haven't made it to the National Football League with all the aches and pains are stepping aside from the game at 26, 27 years old. What is he going to do for the next 40 years? You know, understand that you got to get that degree and that the decision is a huge decision for the family. So, David, I love this. I love this. I love this. I'd like to do this again with you. I'm as far as the phone, if somebody has any further questions, I'd love to answer them. And, again, your friendship and loyalty to me the past 12 or 13 years has meant an awful lot to me. And not just, you know, and I don't want to say minimize it, but not just you, but with the guys that I've worked with at your combines and games. I mean, just unbelievably dedicated people. The coaching I've seen has been phenomenal. And the respect your guys have shown to me is a great source of pride to me.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate coming on. And is there a way that people can reach you if they want to reach out and never ask a question on email or something like that?
Well, we can do it through you.
Okay, perfect.
If they do it through you, and then I'll do anything humanly possible to get the questions answered.
You can always find me at NUC Football on Twitter, and almost everybody probably has my email address, dave@nutsports.com. I really appreciate you coming on. If you wanted to leave one thought with everyone, what thought would you like to leave with everyone before we go?
There's a couple of things that – one of the things is to manage the process. By manage the process, I mean don't let it get out of hand so that it disrupts your family life. Stay on top of the process. Do something positive every single day. Seek help. Human Underclass Combine, NCSA, whatever it might be. Get help, and don't be ashamed to get help. Again, when I talk to guys that go out to talk about the recruiting process, I tell them to, this is not disrespectful toward the parents, but to assume that anybody you talk to knows little or nothing about the process, because that, if you take that attitude, you'll be a big help to that family. Keep up the great work, David. I can't wait to see you down that recruiting road again.
Thanks so much, Coach. I appreciate your time.
Bye-bye.
Have a great day.
On the Life, Learning, and Success podcast, thank you for being with us. I'm David Schumann. Please make sure you go to iTunes and rate us. Give us that nice 5-star rating if you really enjoyed the podcast, and give us your comments. Every little bit helps. I appreciate you on that road and that ride to success. We look forward to seeing you next time.